My mother laughs at this point when she tells the story, the laugh of a mother forgiving her child those sins that have passed. But her tone alters slightly, as she remembers that Lolo suggested we wait until morning to get me stitched up, and that she had to browbeat our only neighbor with a car to drive us to the hospital. She remembers that most of the lights were out at the hospital when we arrived, with no receptionist in sight. She recalls the sound of her frantic footsteps echoing through the hallway, until she finally found two young men in boxer shorts, playing dominoes in a small room in the back. When she asked them where the doctors were, the men cheerfully replied, "We are the doctors," and went on to finish their game before slipping on their trousers and giving me 20 stitches that would leave an ugly scar. And through it all was the pervading sense that her child's life might slip away when she wasn't looking, that everyone else around her would be too busy trying to survive to notice, that when it counted, she would have plenty of sympathy, but no one beside her who believed in fighting against a threatening fate. It was those sorts of issues, I realize now, less tangible than school transcripts or medical services, that became the focus of her lessons with me. "If you want to grow into a human being," she would say to me, "you're going to need some values." Honesty. Lolo should not have hidden the refrigerator in the storage room when the tax officials came, even if everyone else, including the tax officials, expected such things. Fairness. The parents of wealthier students should not give television sets to the teachers during Ramadan, and their children could take no pride in the higher marks they might have received. Straight talk. If you didn't like the shirt I bought for your birthday, you should have just said so, instead of keeping it wadded up at the bottom of your closet. Independent judgment. Just because the other children tease the poor boy about his haircut doesn't mean you have to do it too. It was as if, by traveling halfway around the globe, away from the smugness and hypocrisy that familiarity had disclosed, my mother could give voice to the virtues of her Midwestern past and offer them up in distilled form. The problem was that she had few reinforcements. Whenever she took me aside for such commentary, I would dutifully nod my assent, but she must have known that many of her ideas seemed rather impractical. Lolo had merely explained the poverty, the corruption, the constant scramble for security. He hadn't created it. It remained all around me and bred a relentless skepticism. My mother's confidence in needlepoint virtues depended on a faith I didn't possess, a faith that she would refuse to describe as religious, that in fact her experience told her was sacrilegious, a faith that rational, thoughtful people could shape their own destiny. In a land where fatalism remained a necessary tool for enduring hardship, where ultimate truths were kept separate from day-to-day realities, she was a lonely witness for secular humanism, a soldier for New Deal, Peace Corps, position paper liberalism.